You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Everyone, welcome to the next episode of Sexistential Crisis. I am your host, Laura Kay, and I am here with Dave in the studio here at Podcast Detroit. Hi, Dave.
Hello.
We have such an exciting episode today because...
Aren't they all?
Well, I always say that, but this time I really mean it. And I also always say that, but this time for real.
I'm never drinking again. And this time.
For real.
I really mean it.
I really mean it. Because we have a professional dominatrix in the house here to talk to us about kink and BDSM and all this delicious stuff. I want to welcome Mona Darling here to the show. Let me read her bio. Mona Darling is a professional dominatrix, woman, and couples BDSM coach, author of Kinky Sex Tips for Curious Girls, and now the co-owner of a boutique dungeon and kinky education space, Sub Rosa, located in Portland, Oregon. Here are some of my favorite things from Mona's bio, which I just cannot get over. You've seen your fair share of awesome and crazy things involving adult-sized diapers, human dog walks in the park, white wine enemas, I cannot, mohair sweater mummification, urethral jalapenos, full size. I mean, there's a lot more listed here. I'm going to have to stop because Dave looks not well right now. Mona, welcome.
I was fine up until the jalapenos. Like I was like, yep, seen that. Yep, seen that. Yep. No, wait, what?
Welcome to the show, Mona.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. I was wondering where you were going to go with my bio.
Well, there's like so much more. Can we talk about what that is about? Can you just describe, what does a urethral jalapeno mean? What is that?
Well, the male urethra is actually made from pretty much the same flesh, the same skin, a lot of the same nerves as the female labia, like the inner labia.
Really?
So they can be very sensitive, and some people find it very, very erotic to have the inside of their urethra played with. So I have a wide variety of sounds, which are long metal devices that go down inside there. I have one that vibrates, which get quite the reaction. And somebody once brought me some jalapenos and wanted to be tied down and wanted me to make slices of them and slide them into his urethra.
I wish you could see my face right now. Actually, I wish you could see Dave's face right now. Holy shit.
See, yeah, and like we were actually just talking about this. Like I'm the person that says, look, everybody has their kinks. As long as your kinks don't interfere with my kinks, I don't care. Live your life. Do your thing. It's for you. It's not for me. Like that person I would have questions for.
I mean, you know, but like if it feels good to
everybody
them.
Likes different sensations. Though.
But like that's one of those.
That's
like,
why masseuses.
I'm all about.
You know, they offer you different kinds of massage.
Yes, great point.
See, I'm all about the flow chart, though. Like I'm all about walk me through the flow chart of your life that led you that led that gentleman to be at that particular moment in his life, going, all right, look, here's what I need you to do. I want to be tied down. I want you to cut up a jalapeno. And I want you to put it.
You know what probably happened? He probably accidentally touched his penis when he was cooking with jalapenos and probably sort of maybe liked it.
I have a no nudity near super spicy stuff.
That's rule. A really good rule.
Like, no,
generally.
Not while frying bacon. Not while dealing with ghost peppers. It's a rule.
Mona, okay, I want to dig. So we just kind of jumped off the deep end, but I want to take a step back.
Yes,
I got really, really stuck on the jalapeno urethral thing. Can you tell us a little bit about how you became a dominatrix?
Oh, see, that's such a wide open question.
Did people tell you?
Answer is.
Oh, go ahead.
What was that?
Did people tell you you should be one? Did everyone?
People do think that it's easy to be one, and oh yeah, I should just be a dominatrix so I can, you know, make money for slapping people around. But there's a lot more to it than that. Going back to Dave's question about the man with the jalapeno, everybody is searching for something, an emotional reaction. They're looking for an emotional reaction in vanilla, just regular sex. They're looking for a reaction in sex.
But your job,
when you add kinky sex in there,
you do not have sex with your clients. Is that correct?
How do you define sex?
Is there a vaginal penetration? That's how I define sex. A vaginal penetration thing happening. Is that too much?
There is no. I do not do any vaginal penetration.
Okay.
On myself.
On yourself. Okay. So you're helping facilitate their release in some way. I mean, I don't even know how to talk about this stuff. This is why I need you, Mona. Okay. I'm so I am BDSM kink retarded. I was just saying today before the show began, I'm like, I don't even know how to define.
Okay. So let's take two big Mother May I steps back.
Yes.
Let's start with, Atua, why don't we set some groundwork here? So why don't you give us your definition of dominatrix and of kink?
Thank you.
And we'll start there.
Yeah, we'll start there.
And then I have a follow-up.
So then Laura isn't so confused. Okay.
I am a dominatrix. In kink, things are generally divided somewhat into top, bottom, switch. Top is a dominatrix, a dom, a master, someone who does things to other people. A bottom or a submissive is someone who receives sensations, commands, etc. from the top. A switch is somebody who sometimes likes to be the top and sometimes likes to be the bottom. When you add any kind of, I think kink is a wide, wide umbrella that covers everything from watching each other masturbate, directing masturbation, all the way through bondage, mummification, spanking, caning, any kind of role play, teasing, you know, any of that is a kink. You can have light little kinks that, you know, I like to sort of do little role plays, like silliness with my partner. I like to do light little spankings, but it's not like a formal thing, you know, and then other people are like needing more stimulation, whether it's mental or physical.
So is it?
And a lot of that, a lot of that stems from their emotional needs.
Okay. So, a kink is something that you prefer, that helps you, get off, as I understand it.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool.
So then, we've got that foundation laid. So then what is this space that you've built, and why is it that people come there?
The space that I'm building in Portland, Oregon is called Sub Rosa, or the Sub Rosa Society. It is a full dungeon with cages and bondage walls and spanking horses and all manner of whips and restraints. There's also a cross-dressing area referred to as the soft area. And there's a nursery, which is for adult babies. People who are interested in some kind of age play as part of their kink. People come here to experience it, to learn about it, to get past shame with their partner. And just my goal with creating this with my business partner, Viola Parker, is to create an approachable, shame-free space in which people can come and explore all kinds of kinks and taboos.
Well, so, I mean, like, you know, when we were talking earlier, you know, and that I think that's, you know, something she just touched on is that there is, like, the kink spectrum is so broad and so wide. You know, it's, hey, you know, every now and then, you know, you dress up in a schoolgirl outfit, whatever, that can be viewed as a kink. Or, you know, hey, I, you know, every now and then, you know, I'm going to be on business trips and we're going to use this, you know, vibrator that I can control with an app on my phone.
Yeah.
That can be seen as a kink. You know, then there, I mean, there's soft play, there's hard play, there's, you know, and like she was saying, I mean, there are gradations of things where, you know, some people just, hey, haha, I saw 50 Shades of Grey and I went and bought this little feather whip and blah, 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 blah. And then there are some people that like enter formal contracts,
right?
You know, with, I mean, their sir or their, yeah.
That's really cool that there's all these things. And I love that you're creating a space for people to go and experience this. Obviously, we've, I think, established that I'm on the
dip your toe in the water.
I'm on the dip your toe in the water end of this. And so I'm wondering, for someone who is getting started with understanding kink, understanding their kinks, Mona, what do you say to them? How would you recommend they begin?
Everybody starts someplace. You know, everybody starts at the beginning, their beginning. Even me. I was a newbie once. I had no idea what I was doing once. You know, you get in there and you explore.
I feel like
when I started,
I appreciate,
over 20 years ago, there was nothing. No internet.
I feel like I appreciate knowing that you did not just start with jalapeno in urethra. I feel like knowing you built up to that makes
first
me feel
better.
First
there was the watermelon that somebody had to make sweet love to. Then there was the cucumber. They had to go pick out at the, no. So we worked our way up to the jalapeno. So what you do when you're curious about these things, is I really suggest that you read. There's a lot of amazing books out there that are not 50 Shades of, this is not how you, that's not how you do it. As I
good to know. Okay. I have read all of them. Maybe that's why I'm so confused.
Yeah, I like to think of 50 Shades of Grey as being wealth porn, because if he was not wealthy and taking her from Portland up to Seattle to his, you know,
mansions and
mansion thing, if he was, you know, taking her out to Beaverton, which is a suburb of Portland, and, you know, taking her to his trailer, that would have been an episode of CSI.
Oh, yeah. That's what I've always said. Yeah. If he wasn't rich, that's a Criminal Minds episode.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's hilarious.
It's, you know, so there's, it's, I absolutely love that it started the conversation. I absolutely love that it has so many people able to discuss these things now. And there are so many people that I have talked to over the years who've been like, I have always felt like it was just me. I didn't even know. And now 50 Shades of Grey. And, you know, that was the beginning. But now I've like taken all these classes and like it gave me, you know, it gives people a language to discuss these interests. And it makes them feel less alone. So for that, kudos. The book is great.
That's awesome. So I know that you have a book. Can you tell us a little bit about that and maybe some other recommendations you have?
I have a book called Kinky Sex Tips for Curious Girls. What I saw in my coaching and discussing in classes is that some people just didn't know where to begin. Like they were stepping into this huge arena that is kink and they're like, well, I don't even know if I'm a top or a bottom. And like, you know, so like all of the books that were, they, you know, I had been offering before were like just sort of 102 and there was no like 101 entry level. And so I created a fun, very approachable book that is color pages and word finds, because, you know, you gotta practice with your new words, right? And there's even like little mazes, and it's just, it's very fun and makes it very approachable. And then interspersed is a lot of really solid information that I've learned over the years, over my years working as a dominatrix and as a kink coach.
So this is called Kinky Sex Tips for Curious Girls, correct?
Yes.
Great. Yes. And people can go find that on Amazon if they're interested. What else do you recommend people read? I mean, I'm trying to go on the fast track here.
So did Laura tell you why specifically she's got all these questions and why she's giving herself a crash course? So, and this is why Laura's asking the questions exactly the way she is. So Laura is going to her first kink ball.
Oh, right. I didn't mention that to Mona.
Next Saturday.
Has
no idea what to expect.
Right. So I've got to get my hands on as much information as I can. We're recording from this kink ball that Podcast Detroit, our recording studio, is sponsoring. Mm-hmm. And I just have no idea what
she has no idea what she's getting into, but she knows she wants to be in.
I know I want to be there. I think I'm going to like these people, but I don't know what to expect. So I guess, yes, that is the background for where my questioning is coming from. Mona, do you have any advice for a person going to their first kink ball?
I think that one of the big, it's visually overstimulating, the outfits, the people, the activities. But the one thing that I find that people come away from their first experience with this is being amazed at how much kinksters communicate. Because you walk into a scene and you, let's step back. We are brought up to understand that if somebody really loves us, if they really care, they'll know what we want sexually, right?
Wrong. Yeah, seriously. And so, what a mess that turns out to be.
So what happens is when you enter the world of kink, it's not like you can just, I just saw Carmen Espinizo. I can't say her name. She did, Rape Jokes, the comedy special. And she talks about how straight people just like run up and Lego each other, Lego their bodies together.
Think
about it and you're like, oh, okay. Yeah, they do. Whereas queer people and kinky people, she said, like, straight people have bases and we have an open field.
That's true.
We can't just go for it. We've got to talk about it. And so a lot of kinksters are really, really good at, and some of them are really bad at, but at least they're acknowledging that these things need to be talked about. Communication, consent. You need to talk and understand what each other want and need. So it limits consent are big things that people come away from these events. They're like, wow, there's amazing outfits and like I saw this crazy shit happen, but you really learn how to communicate both with yourself, because people have things that they're curious about and they're like, it's like trying to explain your dream to your partner in the morning and you're like, I have this dream and there are ponies and I think a rainbow, and then the more you talk about it, the more you realize you're just not able to put it into words.
Right.
Well, I mean, I think that's a big part of it too, is you have to figure out where your boundaries are, or at least where you think they are, so that you can communicate that with whoever you're with in order to figure out, okay, does that Venn diagram work out? Like, are we going to mesh up on that? And then trying to figure out, okay, then what's next? I mean, that really is, I mean, because I do, I think those are the two biggest things that I've seen. The three, because you know, communication is huge. And then boundaries and consent.
Well, I want to tell you, so part of my, you know, my dipping my toe into like the kink water, Mona, we did an earlier episode about nightmare threesomes. Mm. And I had this nightmare threesome where the guy brought out a paddle, and we'd never done anything kinky before, and or I mean with a instrument. And he brought out the paddle, and he's like, "Okay, this is going to be fun." And he started like wailing the hell out of my ass, and I was like, "What? Like, okay." What is going on here? Like,
again, walk me through the flowchart that led you to that was a good decision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I just, it was weird. It was kind of like, it was so much. It was honestly too much. Mm-hmm. And I didn't understand, like, maybe he was like a really shitty dom, which now I'm starting to think he probably was.
Sounds like it.
But I was like, why have you...
Sounds like it.
A shitty wannabe dom. Yeah.
Yeah, like, why have you warmed me up to this? Like, mm-hmm. You don't just, like, pull out a paddle. Even I know that. You don't just pull out a paddle and start, like, whacking someone endlessly until they're, like, screaming.
No.
Right? Right? Right.
Unless that's what they told you that they're into.
Right. Well...
But there was no precursor conversation, therefore that didn't happen.
A lot of negotiation and... Yeah.
So,
and
Mona, if I'm looking, or if I'm dating, more likely a guy who seems to think that he's a really good dom, because I have met men like this before, and I'm instantaneously like very critical of them. I'm like, why are you telling?
You should be immediately skeptical.
Right? They always say they're like, I'm like, what the fuck? Like, we haven't even. I barely know you. I just sat down. Like. Like, what should somebody look for in a good dom or top, if that's what they're into?
You should look for somebody who is listening to you, who's communicating with you, who doesn't tell you that you need to do something to show that you're submissive, because you know what? You don't. Your act of submission is a gift, and he should motherfucking treasure it. So if a guy is telling you that he wants to spank you, he should start with, I would really like to spank you. Just because they're the top does not mean they get to do anything they want. Mm-hmm. And it does not mean that the bottom has to do everything that they want. The bottom is gifting them with their submission. The bottom should always have a safe word, which is a word that they can say anytime play goes somewhere that they don't want to be mentally or physically. And the top's job is to make sure the bottom has a good time without using that safe word. Mm. If the bottom uses that safe word, that top better respect it fucking fast. Apologize if needed and discuss what went on. Having to use your safe word as a submissive. What was that?
Oh, go ahead. We're listening.
Oh, having to use your safe word as a submissive is something that happens. A top doesn't necessarily want it to happen. Mm-hmm. You want to sort of take your bottom up towards the safe word, mm-hmm. but not pass over that.
Well, and I think that's one of
But what happens is, well, if the bottom says the safe word, this is your time to earn their trust by respecting that they said their safe word, by not saying, oh, but you know, could have taken more, or I wasn't hitting you that hard, or it wasn't that big a deal. It's when you say, oh, God, okay. You know, and you cannot, like, maybe they took that before and they're not taking it this time. Maybe something else is going on in their life. Maybe you started faster. Maybe it's just, you know, that's when you stop and do whatever your submissive needs to get past that. Might take a second to catch the breath, and it might mean the end of the play. But when the top respects the bottom's use of the safe word, that's when you create trust. And that means that the next time, that bottom is going to be able to go further and take more, because they're going to trust that if they do need to say their safe word, the top is going to respect it.
Well, and I think that's one of the, it's always funny to me having this conversation. I think that's one of the funniest things that people don't understand is that in a dom sub relationship, the sub actually has all the control.
All of it.
And that's the part that people don't understand, because I mean, again, unless you're dealing with a super shitty dom, but I mean, the sub is the one that sets the boundaries, that sets the limits, that has the go, no go decision at any point in time. And then the other thing you touched on that, that I think a lot of people, and this is, you know, I'm a really good dom, just, okay, well then what's aftercare? Cause it's,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
Wow.
Don't tell me. It's just like, I hate it when men tell me they're feminists, but then they can't tell me where their household keeps the paper towels. If you're a fucking feminist, you know where those fucking paper towels are.
Good point.
Aftercare is another way that you build trust. Aftercare is an amazing intimate time between you and your submissive. It's a time for the top and the submissive to go back from whatever depths they were exploring during their play and come back to one-to-one, whatever their one-to-one is. And, you know, when I say that, you know, the bottom is in control, once you're in an established relationship and there is trust, I mean, you can push the hell out of your submissive, mm-hmm. but that's because they trust that you are going to push them and get that adrenaline flowing. But if something needs to stop, that you're going to stop.
Well, and like, you know, so the reason why I brought that up
it's
is
not.
Sorry.
What was that?
No, I was just saying the reason why I brought that up is I have a female friend of mine who, you know, was dipping her toe in the water. She wanted to, you know, explore things with her husband, yada, yada, yada. And something as simplistic as, you know, she brought out some handcuffs one night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, stuff happened and he literally did not know how to handle her when she got into a submissive role where like she wanted to be spanked. She wanted this to happen. She wanted that to happen. And when, well, not when they were done, when he was done, and took the cuffs off, he was just done.
What the fuck?
And like, that's like, you can't do that like that. And so, and like, and so she's, and no, that'll never happen again. Like right. that was it happened once and screw you.
Yeah. Well, because he didn't get the education he needed.
Yeah.
Clearly, or wasn't listening or, you know, wanted what he wanted.
Well, yeah. I mean, and people, if you're submissive and your partner is not, your partner is very, can be very, very like intimidated by it.
Mm-hmm.
Because your partner is going in going, oh shit, okay, because I have to be in control. I have to like do all this stuff and I have to like, you know, read your mind and figure out like, you know, what have you been masturbating to all your life? Because now I gotta like figure it out so I can do it to you.
I have to go check your browser history. I have to go.
when it once again comes down to communication and you can communicate that wasn't, you know, and a lot of stuff like starts because they didn't start talking about what it was, you know, that she wanted from the experience and what he wanted from the experience. And sometimes what needs to happen is when couples are doing this and the top is not kinky and the bottom is kinky, they need to start slower and they need to start with like going to a class together and definitely again reading together. And I watching kinky porn is great. I highly suggest everybody go out and watch, you know, pay for ethically produced kinky porn. And that's great. You can see visually what's going on, but I suggest reading in this situation because you get to see what it is. You can discuss what it is that your partner is getting out of it. Because if you're just watching somebody be spanked, you're seeing one thing. Your partner's seeing another. Your partner's like, isn't that hot? And you're like, just like, nah. And your partner, all they see is like the passion and like the being held down and like the hand on the ass. It's not about like the pain so much as the possession, if you understand what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
And where the partner who's watching the same spanking thing, all they're seeing is that their partner wants them to spank them and they just don't know how, and they are intimidated. Right.
And so they're not doing it right.
They just pull out the paddle and go to town.
Yeah. Whack
but if
ass.
You're reading about it, you're reading about how, you know, the person being spanked is like being held down and like they can feel them being possessed and just controlled physically. And like, just it talks about the emotions and the sensations that they're interested in.
So really the foundation,
as opposed to two people watching porn and freaking out.
Right. And it's amazing because the foundation of what you're talking about is communication. And I mean, that's just plain old useful in sex, period, whether or not you're, however, or whether you're going to be kinky or not. Mm-hmm. You've got to talk. I do not.
You know what? It's great outside of sex too.
Oh, for sure. I mean, absolutely. This is existential crisis, however.
I'm surprised how many people I coach come back and tell me that their communication skills in general in all parts of their life are just so much easier now.
That's wonderful. Do you have a lot of male clients that come to you, or are they predominantly male? What's the makeup?
I do dominatrix sessions. Most of those clients are men. They want to come and experience the pain, the taboo, whatever fetish there. And then I do coaching, and a lot of the coaching that I do is with women. I see couples in both contexts. When I do coaching, and even when I work with couples in the play context, I do try to work with the women more than the men, and work with the women before the men. Because what I find is women are taught everything about shame growing up. They're ashamed of what their body looks like, what it smells like, the things that it does, like how it feels, how it makes other people feel. And by the time you get to be sexual age, whatever that may be for you, there you have so many hang-ups that the sex generally tends to be about what the man wants.
That is the truth.
So, yeah. So, and it tends to be very male-led. So I tend to work with, when I do work with women and couples, or when I work with couples, I tend to work with the women first and foremost.
And then, so you're exploring.
And the men should be separate.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, that really is the truth. I mean, certainly as I was growing up, it was always about ignoring your body, ignoring anything really below the waist, and making sure that the man received his pleasure, however that happened. Mm-hmm. And that's when sex was over. Whether or not I had an orgasm or not, or even knew how to give myself an orgasm, which I didn't know how to do because... You know, nobody, there was, well, I was never taught that was important. And I think many women are in that camp.
No. Yep. Oh my God. If the man doesn't come, you might give him blue balls and he could, I don't know, die or something. Women's orgasm? It's a myth.
Show me.
Yeah. So true.
Oh my gosh.
And in fact, in younger relationships, just a woman's ability to know that, you know, how to make herself come, how to make herself have an orgasm is a sign that she's a slut. When it's not, like, why shouldn't she? I would hope all of the women out there will understand their bodies before they gift it to a man.
See, again, you got to be good with yourself before you get somebody else in the picture.
It's
a recurring theme.
That's a recurring theme on the show. Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, it's interesting because we've had women on the show who have been in their 40s and never masturbated. And and the first time I masturbated, I was 27. I mean, imagine. I know Dave is like completely shocked to hear that because he knows
You were just a late bloomer, and then you've just been sprinting ever since?
Yeah, I've just been running, trying to catch up. But, I mean, this is very common. And then women are not satisfied during sex, and they don't know why. And it's like, yeah, you're not satisfied because you haven't learned to satisfy yourself. You haven't learned what it takes.
Well, because, again, if you don't know what works for you, you can't tell me what works for you.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then...
Well, women are really put in a bad position because if they know too much about sex, they're sluts. And if they don't know enough, they're frigid. And it's way more complicated than that.
True. Guys, it's pretty easy. It just boils down to friction.
And then you add kink into that, and it just gets even. More guilt, more weirdness, more shame. But
I almost feel like
my job. That's why I'm like demystifying it.
See, and I was going to say, awesome. I almost feel like you need to have her back on after next
go to
weekend.
The kink thing, yeah, the kink ball. Yeah, I mean, I don't know what I don't know what's going to happen. Okay. So here's the thing. I had one sort of. I'm going to say traumatic experience with a dungeon in San Francisco. This was years ago. And I lived in San Francisco, and I was newly single. I had just gotten out of my marriage. I was like ready to take the world by storm. And I also knitted, which is, and I didn't know anyone. And so I was in a new city, and I was like, I want to go knit. And I went to a knitting group. And it was all of these really old ladies and people who had kids. And I was like, that's not who I need to meet. I need to meet like fun people.
Right.
So the local dungeon had an event called Naughty Knitting. And I was like, this is perfect. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go and I'm going to meet these like cool ladies. And I don't totally know what they're all about, but
like,
I think maybe.
Like making like scrotum cozies?
Maybe. I mean, well, here's the thing. Okay, actually, no, you were not, nobody but me knitted. So that was the first problem. But I thought like, oh, maybe we'll like more get along because right. I was really sexually adventurous and stuff. Still am. And I show up at the dungeon and they're all seated around this table. It kind of looks like a living room. And I was surprised because I thought, I'd see like whips and chains and stuff. And of course I didn't. And that was in the basement. And so I sat around this table and I sat next to someone who you probably know, Mona. The only person at the table who knew what they were doing other than me was a woman named Midori. And she was crocheting, mm-hmm. which is not tying. She's actually a very renowned rope expert.
Okay.
And so she was crocheting and I was knitting and the other ladies were chatting and they weren't really knitting or... They were trying to crochet and stuff. So anyhow, they were eventually what I came to learn. And this is what I came to learn was that they had all been at an event in Portland the week prior. And at the event, one of the ladies at the table who was, I guess, the dominatrix had gone up to two of the other women that were also at the table. And they were at this event. On stage, the two women were wearing ladybug costumes, and the dominatrix went up to one of them and ripped her tampon out and smeared the blood all over her face. And they loved this. Now, let me be clear. They loved this. They were like, this is amazing, which is great. For me, however, to hear that, and I couldn't even imagine that was
a thing
or possible. I had to leave. I was like shook.
Right.
I it was like I just jumped off the deep end. Which what the fuck did I expect?
Yeah.
Look where I went, Laura.
You dove off the deep end. Yeah.
And so I was a little traumatized after that. But we're back at it. I'm not giving up. I'm not giving up. So.
It's okay. I'll be there at the event to talk you down and after.
I definitely don't want anyone pulling my tampon out, but. Other than that, I feel like I can fully experience the event and we'll have a great time.
Cool.
So there you go.
You will have an amazing time. Just remember, don't let anybody do anything to you that you haven't consented to. Don't touch anybody else who hasn't consented to being touched.
Fair. Fair point. Mona, thank you so much for being on the show with us today. I really appreciate your insight and experience in helping to share Kink 101 with our audience. People, communicate. If you want to learn more about Mona, go to darlingpropaganda.com. That's darlingpropaganda.com. And thank you until our next episode, which might be at the dungeon. I'm not sure yet. We might have one in between. We'll see. Take care, everyone.